I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday, the Food and Drug Administration gave full approval to the Pfizer biotech coronavirus vaccine, and almost immediately, local and federal governments instituted vaccine mandates, and a number of businesses are following suit. The Philadelphia School Board is voting on a vaccine mandate this week. All new employees hired by the city, all city health workers, and Philadelphia-based college staff and students must be vaccinated in the coming weeks unless they have an exemption. Here in Philadelphia, nearly 65% of city residents 18 and up are fully vaccinated. Joining us is Dr. Cheryl Bettegol. She is acting health commissioner for the city of Philadelphia, joining us by Skype. Dr. Bettegol, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here this morning.
Nice to have you with us. And to our listeners, as always, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Does this approval by the FDA give you more tools at the Philadelphia Health Department to get people vaccinated?
It does. You know, I think there are definitely people out there who have been waiting for that full approval just to have enough confidence to get vaccinated. And I think, you know, here in Philadelphia, we have a little bit of a different situation than in some of the places in the South where this has been more politicized. Here, I think the people who remain unvaccinated, largely it's fear of the vaccine. And I think this will really help.
And we're talking about what, 35% of the city population is not vaccinated yet?
Well, so 79.1% of adults have had at least one dose. Okay. And presumably people who've had at least one dose are not afraid of the vaccine. It takes time to get fully vaccinated. So we're only looking at about 20% of adults who haven't started the process yet. Still important, and we're really excited about this additional tool. But, you know, it's a relatively small percent of the population.
Which do you think is more effective with this remaining 20% of the population, carrots or sticks?
I think we need everything. You know, we're not at a stage with this pandemic where we can try one thing at a time. We are, you know, we're using incentives and we're also using mandates because we just have to get there.
And in terms of mandates, what kind of clout, what kind of authority do you have, does your department have to essentially mandate masks or vaccinations either at government agencies or in businesses in Philadelphia?
Well, as you've seen over the last few weeks, the Board of Health, which I chair, does have authority to mandate not just for city offices and city workers, but broadly for the city in this kind of a situation, a public health emergency.
And the school board is going to be meeting this week. It might even be today, but certainly within the next day or so. What advice would you give them about a vaccine mandate?
Yeah, the school board is meeting this evening. And, you know, I think that vaccine mandates are an important tool for getting people over that, you know, whatever is stopping them, but getting them to vaccination. I do think we have to be cognizant when we're talking about mandates to think about who is not vaccinated yet and how do we do this in such a way that it is the least restrictive, the least punitive possible while keeping people safe.
Well, and we're talking about school students largely, you know, under the age of 18. So they are unvaccinated, right? They are an at-risk population.
Well, 12 to 17-year-olds can get vaccinated and in Philadelphia are getting vaccinated. We are vaccinating somewhere around 3,500 per week now. There was an initial rush, but it's been steady since then. But kids under 12 can't get vaccinated yet, and we do have a responsibility to keep them safe.
How do you suggest the city do that?
So I think that there are multiple different safety options and that we need to use them together. So, you know, we talk a lot these days about vaccine mandates, and I think they are important, but masks are still important. And it still is very, very important that people who are sick stay home, that parents not send a child who is, you know, a little bit sick, looks maybe okay, but, you know, had a little fever this morning or a cough, or they need to keep that child home. And, you know, in the pre-pandemic era, very, very common to send those kids off to school with a dose of Tylenol. Right. We cannot do that now.
And when children are in school and unvaccinated, do you have confidence that they will be 3 feet apart or whatever the safe distance is between students?
So both the CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics have been very clear that although distance remains important, the most important single thing is having our kids back in school. So where class size and classroom size don't allow for a full 3 feet of distance between each child at all times, that's where those masks are really, really important. So, you know, if both, if there are two people in an interaction and they are both masked, they're much safer than if only one of them is masked or if neither of them is masked.
Do you understand the fights about masking? They may not be happening in Philadelphia, but we've seen them across the country. Do you, as a public health person yourself, do you understand why this is happening?
Well, I mean, I think everything in our country has gotten politicized and made confrontational in a way that is terribly destructive. And so one of the things I've been trying to do and our department has been trying to do is just step away from the politics, step away from the shouting, listen to people where they're at, and try to get them to a place where they are willing to protect themselves and protect others.
What do we know about the Delta variant? Obviously, this is essentially what we are dealing with now, but as a public health official, what do you want the public to know about this variant?
Well, you know, as probably most people are aware at this point, Delta is more contagious. And that means that everything we knew about the COVID virus and how to protect ourselves is not quite as true. And that's where you want to layer those protections. You know, I've talked a bit about double masking, for example. A single mask will filter out maybe half of particles. You add a second layer, so a cloth mask over a surgical mask, now you're filtering out more than 85% of particles. You're almost as protected as if you were wearing an N95. So masking plus distance plus avoiding crowded indoor spaces, you know, this is not a great time to go to a bar if you're unvaccinated. And people continue to do that. So, you know, layering your protections, being extra careful right now because this is more transmissible, is really important to get us through this last push until we can get more of the population vaccinated.
Are you concerned that we will, in a sense, sort of redo or even relive the winter of last year?
I am concerned about everything. When I look at the rate of rise of cases and of hospitalizations, I am very concerned. We are racing against time. Last time we were fighting a surge like this, we didn't have the tool of vaccinations, as many as we need, that we have now. We have plenty of vaccine. We absolutely can beat this. But that means all of us who are able to getting vaccinated, because there are still some among us, the kids, and you know, a few people who are medically unable, or for whom the vaccine may not be as effective if they're immunocompromised. There's still those folks, and the rest of us absolutely have to commit to protecting them, which means getting our vaccines, and it means wearing masks indoors.
And what should we know about the booster?
So when we talk about boosters, we're talking about two different things. An additional dose, which is considered part of the primary series for people with immunocompromise, to get their full immunity built up. So people, there's a little bit of a misunderstanding here. People who are immunocompromised don't uniformly fail to make antibody when they get vaccinated. Many of them do, but because their response rate is lower than other groups, an additional dose is recommended because we'll get a larger proportion of them to actually develop immunity with that additional dose.
Do you think the COVID pandemic will become endemic, meaning that we will, in a sense, have to learn to live with this virus?
You know, I do, but I think that we can use the tools that we have, especially our very effective vaccines, to protect us from severe outcomes. You know, if COVID becomes another mild respiratory infection where our noses run and we cough a little and we should stay home and drink tea, that's okay. We have a lot of those viruses. If we can use the vaccine to keep our, you know, our population out of the hospital and to stop people from dying of this. But we need to do that. We need to actually take action. We need to stop having pointless debates when we know the science. And we need to, you know, to basically all of us get the information we need to feel comfortable and then actually get vaccinated, even if we don't want to.
I'm going to be talking with 3WHYY reporters in just a couple of minutes. They broke the story of Andre DeRoshan of Philly fighting COVID, how someone, frankly, with no healthcare experience, no medical training, got a vaccine deal with the Philadelphia Health Department and the scandal controversy that ensued. What has your office done to make sure it does not make this same mistake again?
So I was not part of the vaccine effort at that time, so I really can't speak to that. But I can tell you that what we've been doing since I've been part of the efforts since early February, and this is the full team coming together to really address disparities in vaccination rates, to work with trusted partners, not just trusted by us and by city government, but trusted by the community, to get vaccine out into neighborhoods, to think about hours and locations that really work for people, to use trusted ambassadors, to talk with people about vaccine, answer their questions, you know, really be in dialogue and conversation with people. And I think that's why you're seeing, if you look at our numbers here in Philadelphia, for people 45 and over, we do not have disparities in access or in disparities in vaccination rate. And in fact, the vaccination rate among Black and Latino Philadelphians is higher than the vaccination rate among white Philadelphians for 45 and up. We do still have some disparities for younger adults, and that's who we're desperately trying to reach right now. But I think there's really been a whole department, whole city effort on this. I do think that Philly fighting COVID is a distraction. And I think, you know, by spending a lot of time talking about that, we are making people underestimate what to me is just a mammoth undertaking. We will soon have vaccinated 1 million Philadelphians. We previously had vaccinated 1 million people, but we will get hit a million Philadelphia residents soon. We have one of the highest vaccination rates of any American city. So I think the department has really pulled together and has been working to build trust with community members since that time. And I think it's useful to know that because Philadelphia should be proud of the many, many, many people who've been part of this effort.
We have about a minute or so before we have to say goodbye. You are acting health commissioner. Does the city need a full-time commissioner, especially in the middle of this medical healthcare crisis?
So I'm not going to speak about the search. That is up to the mayor. But I do want to quibble with the word full time. I am working about 18 hours a day. So we definitely have a full time health commissioner. But, you know, the city absolutely has to have a health commissioner. I'm going to do the role as well as I can for as long as I can. And I trust that Mayor Kenney will have somebody in this job who he trusts to do it. It'll either be me or someone else who is good. And that will be important for the department. So I don't want to get into the details of that search, but we do have somebody full-time in the role. I don't want people
Fair enough. And we're almost out of time here, but just, I want to make sure that I understand what you're saying. Do you feel like the city of Philadelphia and people, frankly, who were burned by this organization, that they can trust the city again? 20 seconds.
You know, I'm never going to be able to tell people they have to trust us, but we are absolutely committed to getting this pandemic licked, to getting vaccine to everybody in the city of Philadelphia, and to doing everything we can to keep Philadelphians healthy.
We have to leave it there. Dr. Cheryl Bettigol, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. She is acting but full-time health commissioner for the city of Philadelphia. And in just a minute or two, I'll be talking with these three reporters who broke this story about Philly fighting COVID. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Last year, when we were in the really dark days of the pandemic, an enterprising 22-year-old Drexel University graduate student, Andre DeRoshan in Philadelphia, started making 3D face shields for hospital workers using a stable of enthusiastic and idealistic volunteers. Before long, his organization, Philly Fighting COVID, was doing COVID testing for the city, and in the fall of 2020, DeRoshan switched to COVID vaccinations and later got a big contract with the city to set up shop at the convention center. This happened in spite of a series of bright red flags that Philly fighting COVID was in over its head, and the DeRocean was more interested in money than providing needed health care to city residents. The city broke ties with DeRocean, his company imploded, and some pressing questions remain, including how did someone with no health care experience have this much influence in a city of eds and meds? Our guests, WHYY's Nina Feldman, Max Marin, and Alan Yu, broke this story, and they put it back together with a lot of additional material, including an interview with a whistleblower for their podcast, Half Vaxxed, and it premieres tomorrow. Here in our Philadelphia studio is Nina Feldman, WHYY health reporter, the host of Half Vaxxed. Nina, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much. Good to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Alan Yu is with us as well. He's a reporter for WHYY's The Pulse and a reporter for Half Vaxxed. Alan Yu, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And joining us by phone is Max Marin, investigative reporter for WHYY and Billy Penn, and reporter for Half Vaxxed. Max, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well. And let me just make it nice to have all three of you with us, and congratulations on your podcast as well. Let me just make sure our listeners can join us, and you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Nina, let me begin with you, and let's begin with Andre DeRocean, this Drexel University graduate student. And I'll talk with you, Max, because you did some deep dives on his past. But help us understand who he was when it came to Philly fighting COVID, Nina.
Sure. So Andre started out, like you mentioned, making 3D printed face shields early on in the pandemic. And that sort of evolved over the summer into coronavirus testing sites. And it was sort of him and a group of engineering majors and graduate students who had this sort of startup enterprise-y sort of Silicon Valley vibe that was kind of this typical model, identifying a need, operating at a loss to fill it, and then, you know, maybe getting reimbursed on the back end, and really scrappy, a lot of volunteer labor. And he attracted, you know, a lot of pre-med students, undergraduates who were really eager to have a chance to do something and help in this pandemic. So he had some real leadership qualities. You know, people were drawn to him. He brought this group together and kind of created something out of nothing.
Let me go to you, Max, because I know you did. You began to investigate when things began to fall apart and there were questions raised about this group and also DeRocean himself. You did some digging into his past. What did you find?
Well, like anybody who works with the city and doing city business, there's a question about vetting these candidates. And, you know, DeRocean was able to slide into this spot at the height of the city's vaccine rollout, the beginning of it, without much of that vetting. But when we started to look into him, we saw, you know, a resume that was somewhat inflated. It's something that you might see out of somebody who's a young graduate student. And there were some clear holes in that past that had not been addressed. And when you start to dig further into his work with the organization, you know, we started to see and hear from people within the city who were growing deeply concerned with the sort of Silicon Valley startup mentality that he was presenting in terms of this vaccine rollout. And it was something that turned people off. I mean, there was a bit of, you know, an arrogance to his approach to healthcare, something in which he had no experience with. And, you know, there was also this question, I think, about Andre's intentions. And Nina had mentioned the sort of for-profit enterprise and this organization that had began, you know, as a sort of startup, presenting itself as a not-for-profit / nonprofit, had quietly turned into a for-profit organization once it had its eyes on those vaccines. And it was something that would eventually lead to the group's undoing.
Well, let me play a clip, and this is actually Andre DeRocean. He's on the roof of a building. Nina, announcing this vaccination program.
Right.
Let's give it a listen, and he's on a rooftop in Philadelphia, and we are getting it squared away, and we've got thumbs up. Let's play Earth.
All of us kind of got ripped out of our lives 6 months ago because of a massive pandemic. And I definitely don't think that any of you guys saw yourselves in 6 months on a rooftop with a bunch of people that you probably didn't know trying to fight a global virus. So this is definitely nutty for all of us, definitely for me. But, you know, I guess the point is that Earth is closed, right? Literally.
And I remember those days, I mean, you know, a year or so ago when you did feel like without a vaccine and with questions about testing and masks even, where we did feel like we were floundering around. Let me turn to you, Alan, to talk a bit about some of these volunteers. In the podcast, we meet Amanda Hughes, and she is one of these really idealistic volunteers who wants to make a difference, sees this crisis, and wants to put her skills, her enthusiasm to work. Tell us about some of these volunteers.
Yeah, and to me, that's sort of the heart of the beginning of the story, because I think why I wanted to do the podcast is because of the breaking news coverage, you could come away with the impression that this was all the work of Andre Derosian, but that's not the case. We wanted to really highlight that, you know, he was only able to get this far because he was offering a service that was needed, and there were a lot of people like Amanda and other pre-med students and people in the city who wanted to do something to help. And it's really due to their hard work and their passion for serving the greater good, for doing something good for the city, even though for a long time, many of them were not getting paid for any of this. They were just, you know, doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. And Andre only made it to the table when it came to getting vaccines because of the work of these volunteers, which I think is something that we wish we could have gone into had it not been for the breaking news nature of our earlier coverage.
Well, she signed up for the Medical Reserve Corps. She's quoted as saying, "I felt so stimulated. I never felt more culturally worldly aware, in my life of what was happening in the world." To you, Nina, this was what she wanted to do. She saw a problem and she felt like she could help fix it.
Yeah, Amanda was pre-med at Temple. She was excited about trying to jump in and do something. You know, she wanted to be a doctor. She wanted to help. I think that was the case a lot of these volunteers. And, you know, like you mentioned, she tried to join the Medical Reserve Corps, which sort of kicked into gear many, many months later in the pandemic. But at the time, she never heard back from them. She was, you know, doing whatever she could to try to get her hands dirty and help. That's the type of person she is. And this is the opportunity that she found to do that. So like Alan said, you know, all of these young people were hardworking and willing to kind of put in that sweat equity to get the job done. And that is ultimately, you know, what kind of lifted the group to have the profile where it was noticed by the city at all, even just as a testing site. It's also why so many of those young people felt so kind of devastatingly betrayed when it all came crashing down later. They were sort of sold one bill of goods and delivered another.
Let me play one more clip of Andre Derosian, and this is Elon, and this is part of that same conversation, just I think to kind of compare and contrast the volunteers and Derosian. Let's play that.
This is a holy Elon Musk just shooting for the heavens kind of thing. But the idea is that you also want to have those five main hubs operational within a month of phase two. You want to have a preemptive strike on the vaccine and basically beat everybody in Philadelphia to it.
Max, help us understand, I guess, how, and there's a word that is used in this podcast, sprezzatura, which is this, maybe you can translate that for our listeners.
Sure. You know, this is something we had learned in the course of trying to unpack, you know, Derosian and the organization and how he kind of came to be. And, you know, a doctor who was key to helping us unpack this story, you know, said that Andre often described his demeanor as this Italian phrase, sprezzatura, translates, it doesn't have a direct translation, but it essentially means like a studied nonchalance. It is a way of faking it until you make it. And this was something internally that Andre abided by. And, you know, it is a popular way of sort of like getting your way into the professional world. But this, you know, the way even just kind of hearing that clip, you can maybe, you know, hear in the voice of somebody who's 22 years old and talking about taking over the vaccine rollout of one of the largest cities in the country. You know, it's just this sort of mammoth undertaking and this sort of sweeping, you know, confidence that drove so much of Philly fighting COVID. And it's part of what makes this story so fascinating, is watching somebody sort of work their way in and, you know, faking their way upwards and gaining the trust of some of the city's top leaders and, you know, without much intervention, being handed the keys to the kingdom.
And let me just quickly reintroduce all three of you. That's Max Marin. He is an investigative reporter for WHYY, and Billy Penn. He's a reporter for Half Vax. That's this new podcast that's going to drop tomorrow. Alan Yu is a reporter for WHYY's The Pulse, a reporter also for Half Vaxxed, and Nina Feldman, WHYY health reporter and host of Half Vaxxed. And we are talking about this new podcast, this deep investigation into this organization, Philly Fighting COVID, and its founder, Andre Derosian, and what happened, how they were able to get a contract with the city and how the whole thing essentially imploded. And again, any questions or comments, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me play one another clip from Half Vax. And Nina, this is actually you interviewing Andre. You are at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. That's the site where the vaccination site was set up. Do we have that? Yes, we can. Let's play that.
I'm Nina. I'm with WHYY.
Oh, this guy.
Curious about how much it costs to run an event like this on a per day.
I can't actually tell you those specifics, but I can tell you it's a really nice Mercedes.
And is the funding, I mean, is all your funding coming from the city?
It will hopefully start coming from the city as we're applying for grant funding, but currently I am privately funding this, as well as a couple friends of mine.
Got it. And is that, like, where does your funding come from? Is that just your own?
It's my philanthropy, man, and yeah. So is my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to do good things in bad times.
Got it.
Were you able to figure out the money part of this story, Nina?
Much later, it turned out we were. It turned out Andre said, you know, he took out a loan or two to be able to front those upfront costs for the costs of running a vaccination site at the convention center every day. But just his inability or unwillingness to answer that question from the start, and frankly, just learning that he was fronting the money himself and that there wasn't money changing hands between him and the city, was what initially kind of set off my antenna.
I can hear you say, "Oh, really?
Yeah. Why this? Something is weird about this. Like, why is that the arrangement? Why is a 22-year-old apparently wealthy guy that nobody's ever heard of with no real connections paying out of pocket for, you know, upfront for this?" The biggest public-facing vaccination effort that the city has, this is bizarre. So that was, I mean, we were able to sort of piece some of the gaps together as we moved along, but that was definitely the first kind of what's going on here moment.
Alan, help us understand a whistleblower. I will play a clip, but first, if you could just help us understand, this is an ER doc that got involved in Philly Fighting COVID.
Yes, that's right. So this is Dr. Jose Torrados, and he was an emergency room doctor for a very long time. And he left his job at the hospital because he felt unsafe with the lack of PPE. And then he was looking for, but he still wanted to do something to help the pandemic, right? And much like the volunteers, he wanted to make a difference, and he had the medical expertise, crucially, to make a difference. And so that's how he became involved with Philly Fighting COVID. And I had spoken to him for a previous story, and sort of that's when I learned more about this organization.
And he, I mean, whistleblower, is that the correct description of him?
Yes, that's definitely true. I mean, he was the first person to tip me and then us off as to there are deeper questions here that we should be probing. And he was also, you know, one of the people who spoke to the city inspector general when it later did a report going into what really happened here on the city's back end. So he is indeed, to us, a whistleblower and a crucial source in our reporting.
Well, let me play another clip from Half Vaxxed, and this is again this doctor, and he's actually making a reference to his mother. Let's give it a listen.
And it was one of these situations where I'd walk away from the meeting thinking, oh wow, like this is great, this is all what we're going to accomplish, this is going to be fantastic, and she would just be with a list of five things or more of, this didn't sound right, this doesn't look good, we need to take a look at this, I need to ask my people about this, etc., including, let's start with the nonprofit status and make sure that this is clean.
He's talking about his mom, right, who had some questions, right?
Yes, and maybe a little bit more of the story behind that. So Jose was helping out with the group, but he didn't really have a formal contract with them. And then before he was going to sign on to offer up his credentials to the group, he thought that, you know, this is a major career move for him. And so he turned to his mother, who, aside from being his mother, is also a former executive for a Fortune 100 company. So he said that, you know, this is the most business savvy person I know. Let's have her sit in on some of the meetings between him and Andre. And then so that's when his mother's experience and business acumen really helped Jose figure out that, you know, there are these deeper questions about the founding of the group, about their nonprofit status, that really tipped him off further that there were some questions here.
Nina, who in the city offered Andre DeRoshan and Philly Fighting COVID this vaccination deal, if I can put it that way?
Yeah, we have to be careful, because there wasn't a contract, right? I mean, no money changed hands. There would have been there was an RFP, a request for proposals, for organizations to start to get paid to administer vaccines, but that hadn't quite happened yet at this point. That's why Andre was fronting all of the money for those clinics on his own. The city wasn't paying them yet. But this whole thing was happening under the presumption that they would win a contract with the city and be able to reimburse themselves for the money they had fronted up, you know, but before that money was available. So all that said, you know, Deputy Health Commissioner Dr. Caroline Johnson was the person who was running the vaccination effort for the city. You know, Dr. Bettigol, who you just heard from, said, you know, she and her department didn't, and the whole health department didn't become involved in the vaccine rollout until February. So it was completely delegated to a totally different area, and Dr. Johnson was heading that up. She's since resigned after, you know, the fallout of all of this, but she was the person who, you know,
made the overture.
Was the person who invited him to the vaccine advisory panel and was in the closest contact with him all along. And ultimately, you know, it was her staff that reached out to Andre and asked for to see if he was interested in doing this mass clinic.
We're going to take another short break and then get back to our conversation talking about a brand new podcast from WHYY. It's called Half Vaxxed, and it premieres tomorrow. And we're talking with the reporters who put it together. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Artie Moscoen, and if you are just joining us, let me just recap what we've been talking about. In a city with top-notch medical schools and hospitals, how did a 22-year-old graduate student with no healthcare experience get a COVID-19 vaccination deal with the city of Philadelphia? I'm talking with reporters Nina Feldman, Max Marin, and Alan Yu. Their new podcast, Half Vaxxed, tells the story of the rise and fall, a rise and fail of Philly fighting COVID, and about this 22-year-old. And this new podcast will drop tomorrow. In the meantime, you can join us. Any questions or comments at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Max, let me get you back in on the conversation. Was any of this illegal from what you've been able to glean?
No. And we're, you know, when this all went down, and you have to remember, you know, you put yourself back in January when this story is breaking and, you know, anxieties around the vaccine are at an all-time high. There was this question at every turn as well. What rules were actually broken here? And, you know, while the organization hadn't done anything, you know, explicitly illegal, there was certainly questions and looking into things about the arrangement. One of the biggest issues was this provision in their incorporation filings that would have allowed them to sell patient medical data for people that had signed up to get the vaccine with their pre-registry. It's obviously something of a huge concern, but when the questions came down to it, a lot of this looked back at the city, and they were saying, how did you let this happen? What city rules were broken in this process? And a lot of that was unveiled in city council hearings that came out in the fallout. And coming back to officials, many of whom are no longer with the health department, left the health department in the coming months. But what one of the biggest issues was that the city moved forward without a contract that would have had some stipulations in it to look at this group a little closer, to have a more of a vetting process. Mm-hmm. And that contract was not in place.
Hmm. Alan, I know that we were actually talking during the break. If you want to add to what Max was just saying there, in terms of not illegality per se, but certainly some questionable behavior.
Yeah, I think maybe the most questionable thing that Andre DeRoshan did was one day after one of the mass vaccination clinics. Again, this is a time when there was huge demand for the vaccine. There was not enough. And they were turning people away at the door, saying that, at the time that they weren't supposed to be there. It was still at that time an invite-only vaccination clinic. And, after a day of turning people away at the door, many of whom were elderly, were actually newly eligible to get vaccinated. That day, they said that they actually have some doses left over. They called everyone they knew, they said, and they couldn't find anyone to take it. And so Andre DeRoshan took some doses home and vaccinated his friends. Mm. And he's not trained to give vaccine. The state of Pennsylvania actually has detailed guidelines on who is qualified to give a vaccine. He's not one of those qualified personnel. And so that was probably publicly the most questionable thing. And he first denied this, but then he later admitted this when he was interviewed by NBC News.
And I do want to get to that, but let me, Nina, go to you just so our listeners understand. So COVID-fighting Philly went from masks to testing, and then from testing to vaccination. What happened to the people that had signed up for testing?
Right. So that was basically when the city offered Andre and Philly Fighting COVID the opportunity to become involved in the vaccination clinics and operate the first mass vaccine clinic. They had been running testing sites, and they did have a contract with the city to run testing sites. And part of their contract stipulated that they make sure they were serving underserved communities. And there had been a lot of issues with that earlier on. The city sort of said, hey, are you guys sure you're serving the underserved communities, usually Black and Latino communities that have higher rates of COVID and lower rates of testing? We need to see you, setting up and making connections in those neighborhoods. And so they did. They started to. They, especially with the help of Dr. Taradas, who Alan mentioned before, they started, expanding and forming partnerships in Philly's Black and Latino communities with neighborhood groups that really wanted to do testing. It was super important at the time. But when that vaccine deal and opportunity came along, it was literally overnight. They decided to close down and abandon their testing operations. And there were a lot of community groups, a lot of people on the ground that were depending on those testing sites. So that was another kind of, when we started hearing that from people, when we started talking and asking around, that was another big moment where we said, hey, what reputable organization who cares about healthcare would kind of do this in this way, even if there is an urgency and you have only so much capacity and you're limited and you have to choose one or another, such an abrupt shift is not the way to handle a pivot like that. So that was another thing that made us say, who are these guys?
Hmm. Let me play a clip, and this is from Half Facts, but it's a clip from the Today Show where the host is interviewing Andre DeRoshan, and we have that.
I can't get this vaccine.
And
they
we
can't
did that.
Get the vaccine.
Stephanie, we called. The doses were about to expire. We called everybody we knew. Every single person.
Are you qualified to give a vaccine?
I am not a nurse. I have undergone our internal certifications.
But Andre, you're not qualified, right?
No.
Max, you want to add to that?
What we're listening to here is, going back to Alan's description of one of the most concerning things that had really by this time that this had happened, the city had already cut ties with the organization, and all of the questions were opening up as to how this happened. And this sort of news broke, and it was a huge sort of about face. I think that the juxtaposition of Andre's admitted lack of experience, and that sort of like sprezzatura we talked about coming full circle and being sort of outed as like, okay, this guy didn't know what he was doing at all. And the combination of that with the fact that we had so many people lined up to get these vaccines, and that, you know, there was still waste going on at the end of the day. It's kind of hard to remember that now when we have enough vaccines in the city and this country for anyone who wants to get one. But, you know, at the time, this was just such a slap in the face for a lot of people in the city.
And there were, just to underscore this, there were lots of red flags from the Inspector General's report. Flawed testing process, you know, poor community relations, lost demographic information, staff turnover. And as you were saying, Nina, going from this nonprofit to a for-profit, Vax Populi, which raised a lot of questions about selling information, or the potential, I guess, of selling private medical information.
That's right. And that was one of the things that did tip off Dr. Tourada's too, was this kind of switch from the nonprofit to the for-profit entity, or the addition of the for-profit entity. You know, his attitude was, if that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do. But why do it at this critical moment when, you know, you're just launching into the vaccine game? Everything he got, the sense that the way that Andre defended that was, he said, you know, this is the way that we're going to expand. This is the way that we're going to turn the operation that we are developing and producing here at the convention center into a, you know, a franchise. He compared it to McDonald's. He talked about how he was going to develop the perfect model for a vaccine clinic and then sort of replicate it and be able to sell it to other entities, either within the city of Philadelphia or the region or the country. I mean, that was the whole Elon Musk thinking big element of it, was this kind of broad expansion. And so, you know, if you are thinking about expanding to that degree, it makes sense that you might want to have a corporate structure in place where that's a little bit more feasible. But I think, you know, the incorporation sort of revealed those intentions in a way that gave a lot of people pause.
I mean, do we know, did he just get in over his head, or did he, you know, switch from public service to dollar signs?
Yeah, I think, you know, once we heard that categorization of the sprezzatura, it was interesting. We just sort of started to see it everywhere. This kind of just make it up as you go along, don't reveal anything about this being something you've never done before attitude and approach to everything. And I think, you know, when you're forming a for-profit entity simultaneously at the same time as you're being the public face of a city's vaccine rollout, and you've never done any of it before, like, that approach has its limits. You know, you hit a point where fake it till you make it just isn't going to work anymore. And I think that's what we saw Andre kind of hit up against.
Let me read a couple of comments. Kate saying, just this morning, I had more than one scam call from people pretending to be the Social Security Administration or a car dealership. The city should not feel so bad because this happens to everyone. A comment from Doug. I think Andre did a great service to Philadelphia by motivating the first efficient mass injection site for COVID vaccine at the time when the vaccine rollout by the government was stalled and confused. The mistake he is criticized for seems very minor in comparison. Max, let me just give you a chance to respond to Doug. What do you think? He's defending Andre and Philly fighting COVID.
Yeah, look, and I want anyone who's on the fence about listening to this podcast to realize that we're interrogating a lot of these questions. And there's a lot of points throughout this reporting that Nina, Ellen, and I have looked at each other and realized, you know, Andre was right about a lot of things. He was right about the fact that there was a huge void in the city's planning for the vaccine rollout. The city had known for months that vaccines were en route. They had time to plan that we are in one of the biggest medical cities in the country. And we're exploring a lot of these questions about, you know, what he was right about. And we're looking at, you know, what the city had to attest for, and also, you know, how this could have gone differently, right? If a few things had maybe changed, we might be living in a city where Philly Fighting COVID is still running a vaccine operation. And there are valuable questions to explore. And it's certainly a complicated, nuanced story without, you know, any easy place to point just one finger, even if Andre is sort of just this spectacular character.
Sure, indeed. Here's a comment from Walter Sue. He was the health commissioner of Philadelphia from 2000-2002. He says, if we valued public health departments as a country, we would have had hundreds of public health nurses and community health workers ready to do the myriad tasks that the pandemic has presented, including vaccination when it became available. That we have to even contract this out shows how little we understand the potential of public health. Just to go around the circle here, Alan, agree with the professor, Dr. Sue?
Yeah, I completely agree. And mm-hmm. this is a point that, you know, several people made, including someone in the podcast, Professor Allison Buttenheim, who's a researcher at the University of Pennsylvania, who said that, you know, there's a problem when the city has to turn to a group like Philly Fighting COVID when it comes to something as important as mass vaccinations during a pandemic. And, you know, I think it's interesting to think about, after Philly Fighting COVID were no longer vaccinating people, the city worked with FEMA and they set up their own mass vaccination site, which, you know, to its credit, ran very well. And I mean, they got a lot of people vaccinated in a very short time. And when we got to that point, that sort of was another point when this story crystallized. Was, why couldn't the city have done this earlier?
Well, and there was the Black Doctors Consortium, and they've been interviewed. I mean, Dr. Stanford's been interviewed by a lot of people. She's been on Radio Times as well. They were there in part doing some of this work, Nina.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think to the doctor who wrote in's point, like that's the nail on the head right there, is that, you know, why don't we have an infrastructure built in? Why don't we have funding built in so that these public health departments could do something like this on their own, have the capacity to do this themselves and not have to rely on these outside sources, like Alan was saying. But then the question is, well, okay, given the reality, which is that we do have to rely on these outside partners and sources, and we do dramatically underfund public health departments, you know, why go with this one? And that brings us to your question about the Black Doctors Consortium, which is that, you know, even if you're not going to choose a hospital or a, you know, reputable public health institution in the city, which is another question, you know, and you want to pick a community grassroots group with boots on the ground and somebody who can kind of stand something up like this in a nimble way, be a little bit more flexible than maybe a big hospital or other corporate institution, like, why not go with this group that has been doing all the exact same things as Philly Fighting COVID, except the only difference is they're run by medical professionals, they've been doing it for longer, they've tested more people, because all we're really looking at is their reputation as testing sites, right? So if you put them side by side, one is like clearly a better choice. The other one has a lot of big ideas, fancy PowerPoint presentations, and I think, you know, maybe speaks more to the cultural biases of the leadership, which is something that we heard from a lot of people as something that you risk making a decision based on if you are unprepared.
Let me play, just squeeze in one more clip, and this is from Philly Fighting COVID, and this is Councilwoman Cindy Bass.
I would actually like to thank Andre Derosian. His incredible greed and enormous sense of entitlement drew the attention of the press and uncovered the debacle before us. If it were not for his actions, we may have never known about the magnitude of this wink and nod contract, which has put thousands of already vulnerable Philadelphians in an even more precarious position.
Max, we're almost out of time, but I'll just give you the last 20 seconds.
What we're listening to and what we unearthed, you know, after the fallout here was a lot of city officials who hadn't been privy to the processes that are occurring in government that make these big decisions, you know, like how the health department is navigating this vaccine rollout with distributors. And Councilwoman Bass is essentially saying that what we needed here was, more of a plan, and that those city council hearings and consequently over the last 6 months of reporting and trying to unpack this gave us, you know, some clearer answers as to how we moved forward with the vaccine rollout and where we are today.
We have to leave it there. Max Maron, Alan Yu, Nina Feldman, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. And their brand new podcast airs tomorrow. It is called Half Vaxxed. Go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under the programs. You can also download a podcast of Radio Times wherever you get your podcasts. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.